You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Yeah, so when we're talking about, you know, big T trauma, we're talking about life-threatening kind of things, you know. But anytime we're experiencing something that overwhelms our ability to cope, right, that can be experienced as a trauma. Yeah. So that's where relationship stress, ongoing relationship stress, you know, it continually is exceeding your ability to deal with it. Well, your brain and body are going to start to, you know, try to manage that for you. It's actually the brain's survival mechanism. Sure. It's trying to help you.
Yeah.
But then we can get stuck. We can get stuck always in fight or flight.
Running from the saber-toothed tigers.
Right. Which is
why people stay in abusive relationships or dysfunctional relationships. Is that's the fight or flight or freeze.
So your body starts to catalog this as normal.
Yeah. Okay.
And so now it looks for normal. It's used to getting that hit of adrenaline and cortisol every day.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, this is what we do. And you start to get a little healthy and peaceful, and your brain goes, where's my cortisol my adrenaline? Yeah. And then we call it.
I want peace. I want war.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And then so we tend to reenact our traumas, whether that's childhood neglect or, you know, whatever it may be. It's what becomes normal to the brain. So part of getting whole is needing to teach the brain a new way of doing things. And that can be a little bit of a challenge, but it's completely doable. But, you know, we love to say in our world, never the same, never the same. Yeah. Like, this happened and I was never the same. Mm-hmm. In that moment, it was like, you know, when you have a, what do they call that on your phone? When you have to...
Reboot?
Update.
No, update. Oh. When you update your phone. Mm-hmm. In those moments when someone's like, I don't even think that way anymore. I can't even think to think that way anymore. They actually had an update.
Yes.
Their brain had an update.
Yes.
And that's what we all want. Yeah. Like, when they come to me... They're like, can you give me an update? Can you just download it right now?
Yes, please. Yes.
I want to go to sleep and wake up new.
I'm getting notifications.
There's this thing that won't leave me
Ignore.
Not now. No, tomorrow. Yes. Remind me.
So we can update. Sometimes it happens in a transformational moment where you're like, I don't know what just happened, but it just changed. But sometimes it's you've got the old one and you build, and then finally it equals out and your brain goes, oh, we don't need the old anymore. Mm. So both, I tell people both is transformation. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to do the work if maybe your brain needs that kind of transformation? If for whatever reason you're not going to get the instant transformation.
Is this kind of like a Caroline Leaf has the switch on your brain, like the highways that you are, the patterns, you carve out these highways of normal until you create a roadblock and you have to move yourself to thinking differently?
Yes. So the brain learns by repetition. Why? Because you're creating those neural pathways. Mm-hmm. And the more you repeat something, which this is so humbling and convicting to me. What are the things that I repeat every frickin' day?
Mm. Yeah.
Every day.
I'm reading the
whatever you repeat, you will learn and you will be.
You will do.
If it's good, great. If it's not. But the good news about that is you can change that.
You can upload.
Yeah.
Upgrade.
Yeah. So, yeah, the neural pathways. Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
It's wild to think about. I'm reading the Atomic Habits book. It talks about what are the first five things you do every single day.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I found myself irritated.
Convicted?
Yeah.
Disappointed. Sure. I'm so disappointed in me right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And then without having, and I just was reading this today, you know, without creating an actual plan and telling yourself this is how and why I'm going to do this.
Yep.
You just have good intentions. You're like,
you'll just
I
do
wanna
the same thing you did yesterday.
Exactly. Yeah. So kind of the activation of I'm putting the roadblock in, I'm trying to redirect myself to a new path of a simple change of, you know, maybe you had a great session with your therapist and they're helping you.
You told me the story yesterday of doing a SWAT with your family, which blew me away. I'm like, what family does SWAT? I don't think I've ever done a SWAT in my whole life. Sure. So what I saw happen when you were talking about that SWAT is it made you slow down and notice what were our automatic patterns that we've just learned. Like it's innocent, right? Mm-hmm. What are automatic patterns?
Really, what were the patterns that we thought nobody else could see that maybe we were aware of aren't so great?
What did we think we were getting away with?
And who pointed them out? Oh, the children. Yes. All the children said, you
the
know,
students.
You Teacher. Keep saying this thing is really important, but you're not acting like it's really important. Oh, yeah.
But you teacher, you spell it like this.
Yes, exactly. It was. I think the beauty of our family and our culture is giving space for that feedback with the kids and learning, leaning into, okay, what are we going to do? Because either we keep teaching them that what we say isn't as important, or we actually make change and we say it is important, which I want them to grow up believing our words and what we say and support. So,
and they're watching you
all the time
change. Mm-hmm. You know, they watched you on this, I think I'm getting away with this. And then you get feedback, you get confronted within your family unit and you adjust. Yeah. You're like, okay, the leaders adjust to feedback. I guess we all adjust to feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's culture.
Which is a fun thing, but it did cause a trigger in a moment. I was like, ooh. So leading with your body, definitely my breath was it was shallow, it was quick, it was okay. Don't turn red of embarrassment right now. That was definitely in that moment. Later on, Ben and I were laughing, but it's kind of, you're talking about your body. And we did this course, and I feel like I'm so aware of, what am I doing? Oh my gosh, I'm doing that thing. It's happening. It's happening to me. So thank you. And I'm frustrated at the
You're
same
welcome.
Time. I'm so aware of, I need to slow down. Why do I need to slow down?
Well, it's like, I don't know about you, but when I first tried to learn to drive, I remember feeling like, you need me to watch this mirror and that mirror and look over here.
I'm watching my daughter do it right now.
I couldn't do it all. So I think when you learn something new, it feels like that. Like you feel hyper vigilant of it all. Sure. But over time, it becomes more natural, and you do it automatically.
I'm praying so. Yeah. I'm praying that that's what's
going to
happen.
Keep practicing, and you'll create a new neural pathway.
A new one. All right, we're just putting up our blocks. Okay, no, we're going this way, guys. We're going this way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, the driving analogy is great. Mm-hmm. I do remember feeling overwhelmed. That mirror, how many mirrors am I supposed to look at one time in 30 seconds?
I remember we got to the bottom of our hill, there's a stop sign, and Levi, 16-year-old Levi, says, which way turns that blinker on? I'm like, up.
You don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah, right. Searching, like I don't even know the answer to that question.
Yes. It's been stored in your memory.
I guess I do. Yes. It's just way
back. No, it's stored. It's automatic. It's a beautiful thing. So they're still kids, and they actually can lead the way because they're so good at being present. So ways in which you nurture that in them and reinforce it, and then as a family, right, use that.
And that's not going to happen on accident.
No, probably not.
You know, what's going to happen on accident is what's currently going on, which is everybody just got their face in their screen. So you have to have some intentionality behind a family game night and a walk, and you know we're going to sit around and talk and stare at the fire. Or we're going to do this. We're going to go play. That has you're like antisocial if that's what you're doing these days. You know you're like you're going to breaking the pattern of your children's momentum that culturally we've created for them. They're just enjoying the fruits of our labors, really, in all this distraction and disconnectedness. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a plan. I mean, you've got to have a deliberate, concentrated plan for when they don't like not being able to do what is so easy to do.
And what all their friends are doing.
Everybody they know, including you.
Including you.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's the battle of, Adeline's almost 13, and she has that iPad, but she wants a phone. She wants a phone so she can, because she doesn't take her iPad with her to youth group. She doesn't take her iPad with her to the grocery store. It's at the house. But if she had a phone, she could basically take the iPad with her. Mm-hmm. And I just look at this thinking, man, there's only a window of time that I keep I get to keep saying no to this mm-hmm. that protects you from the iPad going with you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And I think Ben and I are trying really hard to not just give a full yes to something that feels that, I mean, I look at our life. We didn't have one. I didn't have one until I had a cell phone when I was 16, but it did not do anything.
Yeah, flip phone.
That this
I just had a retirement home the other day, and there was a guy sitting there with a flip phone. I was like, yep.
God yep. bless
right.
him.
Yep. So knowing I didn't have access to all those things, I got to be present in the moment of driving, and you mm-hmm. have to entertain yourself. You have to go find the creek. You have to go find the, you know, you don't have maps. We had pieces of paper that we had to figure out what exactly does that mean in 300 feet I'm turning left. Mm-hmm. 1,002, you know. Yeah. There's, I feel like there's a mystery that the children nowadays are missing out on engaging in a world of creativity that I think, you know, they are defaulting to being worried about if they're mastering the TikTok dance or not.
Right, right.
Being relevant.
Well, you're talking about teaching them how to use technology as a tool mm-hmm. instead of technology running their lives.
Yeah.
Right.
The thing that's probably most concerning to me is how we are disconnecting our body, soul, and spirit with technology. Mm-hmm. We're just literally compartmentalizing ourselves to be unaware. Like what you're, everybody I know that comes and sees you says, oh man, the thing that helped me the most was paying attention to my body, paying attention to what, you know, where I am and what's going on, and essentially being present. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that's that these technological tools are helping us be so distracted that we don't have to deal with the pain mm-hmm. of the integration and deal with reality. Mm-hmm. We're escaping reality through this mm-hmm. addiction, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's a relationship with a thing mm-hmm. that I control mm-hmm. instead of actually dealing with the painful emotions of I'm all stressed out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel out of control. I feel overwhelmed.
Right.
And then we're teaching that to our children. Right. That's what concerns me most.
So how can we begin to learn ourselves and know when mm-hmm. it's gone too far?
Yeah.
You know, when I start to feel off, okay, maybe I'm relying on my technology too much. But when I'm not relying on it too much, then it's this wonderful tool that makes my life better. Totally. I don't want to like
Hot
down
Sunday.
Make mm-hmm. all technology sure. bad. But can you be so in tune with when do you feel alive? What's happening when you feel alive? Chances are you're not on your phone the whole day.
Right.
Right. So it's just about
maybe use your phone
knowing
to get to
yourself.
That great trail.
There you go. Yeah. Use the phone to get to the trail and then at some point turn it off or whatever.
Take photos.
But it's all about what, once again, what do you value most? What makes you feel most alive? How is this a tool for me? How do I overconsume it sometimes? And then I just feel funky and out of sorts mm-hmm. and I don't feel good. And then I use more technology to feel better, but it doesn't really actually make me feel mm-hmm. better.
100%.
And we can become addicted to technology just like anything else. You get major hits of dopamine every time you hear that little bling bling. Like, you know, developers are know this science better mm-hmm. than you know this mm-hmm. science, and they're using it because they want you to, you know, open your Instagram often and open this often. So why don't you learn the same science so mm-hmm. that you can make it, you know, benefit you. Now, I don't cover that as much in the course, but
it's just wisdom you're giving.
It starts with knowing your body, and that will help you know, am I going down the path that feels most aligned to me or not? Your body knows way before you do, mm-hmm. and it's sending you signals. Mm-hmm. And if you ignore them over and over, the signals get louder and louder and more painful mm-hmm. and harder to recover from. Mm-hmm. But your body loves you. It's just trying to help.
The memory that sticks out is actually at your house. Mm. And, you know, I mean, just for context, I am now learning to parent this child at Danny and Sherry Silk's house. Mm. So that's always exciting. Mm-hmm. Hey, let me fail in front of you. That'd be great.
People that do
Which, you know, and I had a mild fear of failure and rejection, so that consumed my life as well. So just, again, more context. Here you are. And this child is just ruling me, and she's calling the shots. Mm-hmm. And to bring this back to marriage for a minute, I was still learning how to set a limit with Brittany. Mm-hmm. I was still learning how to set clear boundaries and clear lines of what's acceptable. You know, what does respect look like for us? And, you know, she wasn't disrespectful all the time. But often. when it did happen, I wasn't doing a very good job of protecting that part of our culture. Mm-hmm. I just kind of let it wash over me. So our child is watching this, our two-year-old. So she figures out that this is what works.
All the women in this house seem to treat dad this way. Might as well.
You know, and so I've got these new tools that I'm trying out called Funna Room or Do You Need Some Hassle Time? She was little, so it was Funna mostly Room. Funna Room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the main one at this point in her life. And so I would say, can we fun or go in your room? And I'm on the inside shaking. Like, she doesn't believe me.
Please pick fun. Please pick fun.
I don't believe me. So, you know, she challenges it at every turn. I pick her up because she chooses a way into me doing it for her, mm-hmm. put her in the bedroom, and she comes storming back out, yelling and screaming. And all
now.
Of a sudden.
I just remember her yelling, now.
I just feel consumed. And, like, I'm just not going to win this. And to fast forward, I think, a little bit, it was probably not too much longer after that I started the process. I didn't get very good at it for a while. But I think once I started to figure out how to tell you no mm-hmm. in love and have a boundary and set a healthy limit, it's at that moment I realized, oh, she needs the same thing from me. But it had to start here.
It's so fun.
and this really, you know, goes back to your journey in discovering that you need something.
Absolutely.
You know, and as soon as you had some value around what you needed, you could start actually showing up in places where it wasn't getting met.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so it went from marriage culture into family culture.
Yep. Yeah. Which I think has become part of our culture. Like even our kids are willing to set limits at this point.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But when we look back at the journey, if that continued and I wasn't willing to adjust that, and keep that thing alive.
You'd be really miserable.
I wouldn't be sitting here.
We would all be miserable, but it would be. Yeah. I mean, there was a moment where I can think of you telling me, I'd love to talk to you and your voice sounds like mine. We were driving, and I had a thought, I'm going to jump out of this car. Don't you dare talk to me like that. You said it again, and you know, it's one of those moments where it's the first one, so it feels really memorable. Mm-hmm.
And left a mark.
What
I got a scar.
What did you just say? You know, you had to repeat it a couple times, and it wasn't the only time. But it's the I'm going to require something from you, and it translated to Delaney. I remember once you won the battle with her in Funner Room. Yeah, if you were winning the battle with me as well. You gained some confidence to it.
Yeah.
And it definitely, it very much our marriage was this exchange of what is the level of disrespect that we're going to permit in our marriage. And there was a lot of disrespect, and we talk about how there's different levels of disrespect or different
expressions
of it. Mm-hmm. And mine was very loud.
Yeah.
And very obvious.
Very avoidant, mm-hmm. quiet.
And so it still was something we were both participating in. It just looked different. But that was such a loud component of our early years of marriage. It was really hard to have any form of a partnership and any form of a culture that we were doing together. So it felt like we were raising a family separate almost in the same house in a lot of ways, because there was how you raised her and how I raised her, and it wasn't how we raised her or we had more kids. But that was very obvious because that's how our marriage was. It was just this separated component of our life, even though we were doing it together.
And all the stuff that still had to be worked out, Addie picked up.
Absolutely.
And here she goes.
And then they got to Lincoln, and the girls were like, okay, we figured it out now.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's some truth and help for you. But I just to your point real quick, Danny, about me actually learning how to have a need early on, mm-hmm. I think there's something to say about gaining value for myself. Mm-hmm. Because I think this conversation about culture and things flowing down from the top, it comes from a place of wanting to grow mm-hmm. and being hungry to grow. And it's really hard to have that stay alive if I don't have value for myself.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And maintaining a healthy hunger for growth is really hard to do. So that's when I look back down the history of Ben's life, down the hallway of my life, I think that's one of the things that had to get worked out is the value for me.
And when we look at how you expressed low value for yourself and your needs. Yep. It was really, you know, being more passive
totally.
And avoidant, and that would be my style as well. Yeah. But equally,
that's good. Yeah.
Being overly aggressive and mm-hmm. dominant and punishing and intimidating to get your needs met is another expression of the same problem, which yep. is I feel insecure yep. and I don't think people will respond to my needs if I just ask for them. So mm-hmm. I won't be vulnerable. Yep. I'll just take control of the whole yeah. situation. And then the passive-aggressive communicator is going after a manipulative, intimidating, anxiety-producing way of punishing people for not reading their minds. And, you know, like, okay, well, if you had a heart, you would have picked up on the fact that I needed something right there. But because you heartless thing, you that's another expression of the same problem, which is I don't value me enough to show up. Mm-hmm. So part of your family culture ends up being an agreement that everyone shows up with you matter yeah. and so do I.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
And we communicate in such a way that respect is immense. Like the most important thing we can do when we're really hurt and upset is lock on to our own self-control over being respectful, expressing our needs.
Yeah. And I can think of so many times so now, because our levels of disrespect, you know, we don't really have tolerance for that anymore. It's very minimal, and if it comes out, it's pretty much addressed by right somebody in the house. You know, it's not just you and I. And that's the crazy part is you and I will have an exchange in the car, you know, where I get scared, and then, you know, your response to my scared. And if there's a tinge of disrespect in there, it's usually the kids in the backseat that are saying something,
yeah,
which is annoying. Absolutely, because it's like instant. Nobody's having any fun.
We have an audience.
We have an audience that feels powerful enough to say something.
Oh, this is a participating audience.
Yes. Yeah. And so now whenever that happens or any exchange, and I think that's the part that translates is, you know, we've created a culture in our marriage and then put that on display and then empowered our kids to even hold us accountable to if we start to be no fun.
Yep.
They get permission to communicate.
I will say this again, because this is really important. This is critical, because this is how you have one culture and not yes. two cultures.
Yeah.
When parents can do whatever they want
yeah.
Yeah.
to each other or to the kids, and there's no accountability, there's two cultures, because the kids will yeah. be held accountable yeah. to the culture that we tell all our friends we have. Yeah, this is the let me tell you about me, mm-hmm. and then I'll listen to you tell me about you. That exchange of truth can help, not always, because not everybody wants to hear the truth.
Yeah,
but it can help us understand why the other person's behaving the way they're behaving. If you just shut down, distance yourself, and don't respond to my emails or phone calls, then I just feel rejected. I don't understand what's happening over there. Mm-hmm. But if you tell me that you feel scared by the unpredictable response or reaction you get in the relationship, I don't know who I'm calling, I don't know who I'm texting with, mm-hmm. I don't know who I'm talking to. That unpredictable experience scares me,
yeah.
and I don't want it in my life. So that's why I am not responding, and that's why I'm not talking to you. And until you can consistently be respectful and kind and able to listen to things that I need, I don't have very many people like that in my life. Mm-hmm. Actually, none.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've practiced with Delaney when she has to have confrontation, she's not think on your toes type of girl, and she's still learning the concepts. 17. I don't know how old you are, Ansley, but it's still new. If it's mm-hmm. still a developed tool that you're practicing, sometimes I recommend to write down what are the key things that I need to talk about for myself. You know, I feel scared, the inconsistency, and what I'm willing to do, which is I'm willing to open up this relationship as soon as those things go away. I'm no longer scared of this relationship. So, you know, and then keeping, if you read Keep Your Love On, those I messages, you know, kind of put that on a piece of paper and figure out how am I going to communicate using this tool. And then little bullet points below that keep me anchored to what the goal of this conversation is. Because, you know, they do drive, you know, their flybys and they're dropping bombs and it's, you know, accusing you or really hurtful. And so those things default someone that maybe doesn't know how to use the tool or isn't a fast-paced thinker to know what to say. And so I know that Delaney's just practiced, this is what I'm going to communicate. And it's it feels silly, but you kind of just say it over and over and over again, no matter what bomb this person's dropping in the conversation.
And as long as you're listening, I'll continue talking. But the moment you stop listening, I'll stop talking.
Yeah. And leading with that. So I think helping yourself create a plan around this conversation, what do you want to walk away that, you know, you're trying to communicate and knowing I'm not going to argue, I'm not going to take the bait, I'm not going to participate in disrespectful conversations. Just creating a plan around that is probably a practical way to feel more successful in having a conversation.
If people spent near the time mapping out what they were going to do instead of mapping out how I'm going to try to get you to do something, it would just be, you know, revival would happen all over the world. I'm telling you, it's just so amazing how much energy we put in trying to get somebody else to see something, to say something, to do something.
Or the amount of time we give in the defensive posture of when you do this, I'm going to do this, instead of coming, this is my goal, this is what I'm going to do. It is, I mean, a little bit of effort and planning helps you feel prepared in this conversation and helps you walk away going, I did a good job of working on me, which is... sounds like what needs to happen.
Right. And I'm going to say, to
set this boundary.
I'm going to listen for, this is my assignment. You know, my assignment in this conversation is to Kylo 5.
We introduced Marvel, which is your thing. So I don't know if you want to recap what that is.
Yeah, it's just a personal growth model, organizational growth model. I have used it for years now and books coming up on it. So that'll be fun. Get lots of stories and lots of illustrations of how Marvel has worked. And we're on the A now. We're on authenticity.
Yes. And what does that mean to have authenticity in growing yourself?
Well, it's getting clear about, you know, what we talked about last time, which is really has to do with who am I, where am I headed, and what am I responsible for right now?
So understanding, being, I think that's the, when I think about authenticity and someone being authentic, it's, you know, probably someone that is clear on their identity, their calling, and their mission, because they there's a piece to them. There is a I don't know if it's predictable as much as it is just I have trust in that you're going to show up as the same person every time I encounter you or in different groups. You know, there's a I think a comedian that we used to listen to, and he would always talk about like. Now, around these friends, I'm British, you know.
Yeah, don't be thrown by my British accent.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so that's, I've changed around the environment that I'm in. You know, that is, when you notice that in a person, you're like, oh, well, then who are you with me? Or what can I expect?
Or who are you?
Yeah. And
this is the, you know, the big challenge for children in watching their parents. And watch their parents turn into different human beings based on who they're around and who they're not around.
I'm feeling convicted right now.
Yeah.
Only in that.
You're driving.
No. I will tell you all about my driving if you want to know about my driving. But I was laughing because we were at this event and one of my girls were with me, and this lady kept coming up to me and I didn't know who she was, but she knew who I was and she was talking to me like that, and I felt really bad, and Adeline's like, "Do you know who this is?" I'm like, "I don't know who it is." This person comes up again and Addie goes, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to put on a smile and act like I know her." Totally what happened. But I was like, I'd be friendly, but I still don't know who she is. Mm-hmm. And we kept running into this woman, but it was definitely, Addie thought it was funny. She's like, "You were really excited to see this woman that you don't know who she is." I'm like, yeah. I was not very authentic to the moment.
I know how to be nice. I know how to be welcoming.
That was more the goal, but I thought it was funny. Leave it to Adeline to call me out on any of those things. It's truly Adeline.
So the opposite of authenticity would be hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. That I am inconsistent.
Yeah.
And my life kind of bounces around and I'm an actor. Mm. You know, I'm just playing to the moment, playing to the person, playing to the benefit, and in essence, I'm manipulating. Mm. So a lot of, you know, when I have a broken identity and that orphan thing is at work, then there is inconsistencies everywhere, especially with the people closest to me observing my life. Because they'll watch me out there be stellar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just this most amazing, fun-loving, compassionate, serving. And then I get home and I turn into Jafar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jafar is often the reference for the worst person you can think of.
I know. He's so
evil.
He's huge. He's just huge and scary. And he kind of morphs into like snakes and different stuff.
There you go. He lacks his authenticity. Yeah. And that is very true. I think our husbands or our spouses, and our children, and if you don't have that, it's probably your next closest relationship that's in your inner circle gets to see really the confusion around who are you? Because you say you're one thing, but you act a different thing. Or I experience you as this. I was just meeting with a young girl and from family coaching, and she was just talking about her experience from her father. He was scary, not a nice man, drug addict. And he kind of exposed himself to their community and everyone was baffled. They could not believe that this was who he was. And they're like, "This is who he's always been with us." Mm-hmm. But it's this in meeting with her and talking with her, she craves that the identity that everyone saw her father as was really what she got to see at home, because he was this helpful, nurturing, mm-hmm. loving person, but mm-hmm. not at home. Mm-hmm. And it is sad when we don't understand how crucial this element of authenticity is in across all relationships. Mm-hmm. It's got to show up.
And this really kind of goes back to what we talked about last week with the mission in my life is my authenticity is how do I line up with my mission? Mm. And I think that's why a daughter at home is watching someone out there look like they're accomplishing the mission, but the closer that they get to you, the more you actually see their mission.
Yeah.
And that's a manipulation. That's an act, because who they are up close and intimate is a completely different person. So that gap, that's hypocrisy. The gap between who you got everybody thinking you are and who you live is they got to match up. This is the whole healthy families are going to save the world thing. This is it.
Yeah.
Wholeness is the authentic match of your mission and your character. And I think that is so important. And this is where you become accusable. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're supposed to be beyond reproach. Well, that's what it is. It's not like, oh, you do something I wouldn't do, therefore you're reproachable. Like, mm-hmm. No. I am doing what I said I was doing. I wasn't, I'm not secretly having a beer over here, mm-hmm. and you are thinking that I don't. You the only reason you think I don't drink a beer is because you aren't in my life. Mm. You think something else, you know. So I just want to make sure that you have an expectation of me that is authentic.
Yeah.
Because there's also the unrealistic expectations that people have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's kind of dating.
Yeah.
You know, when you're dating someone, you're like, oh my gosh, I love all the things I don't know about you. I've filled in all the blanks, and you are my perfect soulmate. And then you start happening. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're not anything like I fabricated in my fantasy. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I never was trying to be that.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed that you're not my fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm so happy to discover that you're crazy and I'm going to get away from you. So that has, there is a match between the illusions I create about who you are mm-hmm. and the experience I have with who you are. And I'm not negating that we're going to be adjusting throughout our life together, but if you think I'm going to be your dad, mm-hmm. you know, good, bad, or ugly, I'm not. I'm not your dad. But you did come with that. You did bring that example of a father or a significant male in your life. You did bring that to the relationship. So our struggle is going to be about the adjustments you make to who I am. Mm-hmm. And the release of things that I am not.
Yeah.
And so that I can be authentic in our relationship and not disappointing mm-hmm. because I didn't live up to your...
Yeah.
Or down to, either way,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
You didn't live up to or down to who you brought with you in your experience of your dad.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Krishna Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.